ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hello there, I'm Kate Evans from ABC Radio National's The Bookshelf.
And I'm Sky Kirkham from Radio National's Arts Hour. Every week in our Critics' Corner, we bring you recommendations and analysis of books, movies and music with some of the top critics on the network, including, of course, Kate.
Well, that's very nice of you, Sky. But this week we're joining forces to talk about two literary adaptations that have made quite a splash this year. That's Wuthering Heights and Hamnet. And I guess the big question is, how do they shape up against the novels on which they're based? So page and screen and what they do differently. And what is it, the big question here, what is it that makes an adaptation successful or not?
And I think one of the things, and the point at which we'll start, is one decision every adaptation has to make is what they actually want to do with the story. Who or what is the focus? What gets cut? What gets added? I went and looked back at Andrea Arnold's 2011 version of Wuthering Heights, which was the last big attempt to take on this book. And that was very much Heathcliff's film. It had a major focus on race, class, and the wildness of the moors, none of which, I would say, is what Fennell was after in this version of the film. So, Kate, what has Emerald Fennell made? What is she interested in for this version?
Now, of course, it would be easier to talk about what she's not interested in, and although I'm sure we'll get to that. She's interested in bodies and sex in a way that I guess skews the whole idea of what romantic literature is and gives it a sort of a 21st century version of those terms. She's interested in buildings and flesh and in melding those things together. She's interested in melodrama. And so I guess she is, in some ways, she is interested in Catherine and Heathcliff at the expense of the other characters. But again, something we might get to is which versions of those two characters she's interested in or not interested in. So which of those many things should we turn to next, Sky?
Well, I think let's start with that central romance of Catherine and Heathcliff, because this has been the marketing around this film is the greatest love story ever told, which is for
the
anyone
strangest
who...
description of this novel that ever
is,
given.
That is not a description of Wuthering Heights, the novel. But Fennell has said that this novel is, the title is in inverted quotes, and it is more the idea of Wuthering Heights that she had when she read it at 14 than a straight adaptation. And for me, where the movie wants to center is in the obsession between Catherine and Heathcliff.
And centering it on obsession is probably not a bad way to begin any sort of analysis of this novel, because there is obsession and drama and ownership and an obsession not just with bodies but with wealth and buildings and all of the things that go with it. But I guess the big question with this film version is at the expense of what else? It's at the expense of the framing device of the novel, which is that this is a story told by other people. This is a story about other characters and about generations. And it's also, arguably, a story about race and colonialism and who belongs where in the English story. And of course, it's also famously a story of place.
It is. Yeah, the moors are so central to the story of Wuthering Heights. And I feel like they've been central to most other adaptations of the film. And they exist in this film. But I feel that Cathy in particular, Margot Robbie's Cathy, ends up trapped inside a lot. She's confined into... There's a scene in which we see a dollhouse that has a dollhouse inside it. I think it's a very knowing wink by the director to acknowledge that this film is in its own way a dollhouse. It delights in the rooms that it's created, in the structures it's built, in the placement of the characters in those rooms. But at the cost of the wildness of the moors, particularly in the second half of the film, we never outside of a montage, which I think we'll get to later, we never really live in the moors or with the moors or with the wildness of that space.
Although there is an awful lot of rain, there's an awful lot of cloth being stuck to bodies. But yes, you're right to draw attention to the interiors. And of course, that's what novels do. Novels do interiors and interior lives. And what I thought was quite an interesting decision of the film was to make the rooms in the house in which, you know, she marries into to be like her skin and like her flesh. And I thought more could have been made with that because there's skin and there are also hands everywhere. There's a whole fireplace covered in hands. But I say that because I became obsessed with the details at the edge of the frame because I was getting a little bit bored, a little bit irritated, a little bit feeling like watching this film was an endurance test. And so I was having to pay attention to all of those moments of texture to try to stop myself rolling my eyes too much.
I unfortunately felt the same. I walked out of this film having felt bored. And that was, I mean, beyond anything else in an adaptation or in a film, I think that's kind of the cardinal sin. I'm okay with it taking liberties with the source material. I'm okay with a shift to what it's drawing from if it's doing something with it that captures me, that's interesting. But instead, I checked my phone for the time at one point, which is never a good sign and not something I would usually do in a film. The other thing for me, I'm curious how you felt about this, Kate, is that for a film that's so built on obsession and particularly physical obsession of the idea of sex and sexuality, it felt to me largely almost sexless film. The desire is very Bridgerton bodice ripper, but like a hands-off version of that.
Bridgerton is much sexier.
Yeah, true.
Than this version. For all sorts of reasons, and some of it is about comfort and discomfort, because some of the sexual stuff, and I think there's nothing wrong with being discomforted by art. In fact, I think it's one of the things that art does for us. But the discomfort with this one was what's being done with the character of Isabella, who is the woman who Heathcliff ends up marrying and abusing and tormenting because she is not Kathy. But it's interpreted in the film in that she's titillated by it, that from the moment she sees this wild, dark character, who, remember, in the book is described as a gypsy-like or a Lascar or something that is both forbidden and not quite white and not quite speaking English. As soon as she lays eyes on him in the film, you know, her eyes widened and she's excited by him. And this ends up by her being degraded by him, and we're meant to understand that this is okay and that this is something that she's getting off on. And that was a sort of degree of supposed sexiness that left a bad taste in my mouth.
Interesting. I agree, particularly from the source material. But at the same time, for me, Isabella was the only character I genuinely believed as sexual, as sort of enjoying the idea of that physicality, which I think is really awkward given the source material and the abuse and the way that that is used to show that Heathcliff isn't the dark, brooding hero, but is kind of an abusive, terrible person. But in this version, Isabella, because we don't just have her scenes with Heathcliff, she also has a really interesting psychosexual relationship with Kathy. She hands her a book, a fold-out book that has images in it, which, you know, are very reminiscent of various genitalia. And
that was sort of funny.
It was. She, for me, is the one character that I thought was really interesting and funny and ties to, I think, what Fennell does well, which is weird, like Barry Keoghan's character in Saltburn. I think that's where Fennell is actually interesting in dealing with those characters. But in making Isabella buy into the abuse from Heathcliff, while it might make Isabella's character more interesting in some ways, it makes Heathcliff's significantly less so. everything is sanded down about him and Kathy, their meanness, their solipsism, their obsession. It's all a little too just they're very pretty and pretty at each other.
And I guess that raises the question of what the tension is between the film and the novel, and whether, you know, whether we're supposed to be watching something for some idea of authenticity or some reflection of a novel. And of course, they're very different forms that do very different things. And I was talking to another critic that I know about this who said, well, you know, if it leads somebody back to the novel, maybe that's a good thing. And that if it's leading all of the people who believe that they're watching a sort of fluffy romance in big frocks back to Emily Bronte, then maybe that's okay.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing I would say is I think we need to take into account the success of this film. Andrea Arnold, the previous version of Wuthering Heights, took $1.7 million gross on a budget of about $7 million. This version is up to $151 million already worldwide on an $80 million budget. So it's definitely much more of a commercial success. It's the biggest release of the year so far. So I suppose whatever we make of it as critics, the marketing, the angle that they have gone with has certainly drawn more people to the story than we've seen in previous years.
And there is a version of the book that has Margot Robbie and Jacob Elordi on the cover, which might well mean that there is another audience who is now going to be surprised and taken with this book published in 1847 that is extraordinarily readable and engaging and strange and a bit bonkers. And they might well find themselves reading this 1847 novel with a different set of eyes.
The other major adaptation that's come out this year, it's just had some big wins at the BAFTAs, it's probably setting up for some big wins at the Oscars as well, is Hamnet, directed by Chloe Zhao, starring Jesse Buckley and Paul Mescal. And this one has definitely had a better critical response than Wuthering Heights. Kate, what were your initial takeaways or feelings towards this adaptation?
Well, first of all, I should say that I really liked the book by Maggie O'Farrell, Hamnet. And so this is a book that is about a woman called Agnes and her family and her son, Hamnet, who dies at the age of 11. Now, this is the family of William Shakespeare. But what I like about the film version is that it doesn't name him. And although he is this character who comes in and out of the story, who lives in a world of other landscapes and imagining, it's the restraint of the novel that particularly worked for me. That same restraint isn't there in the same way in the film. We know that it is the family of William Shakespeare. I mean, I quite enjoyed the film. But what they did differently in the film was change the structure so that it's chronological, whereas I love the opening in the book, which is this boy racing through the city. And so we're instantly in this, you know, 16th century town where with these bodies where we're chasing a family and a child and a disease and all of these complicated things. And what film often has to do is pare things back. Now, I know that's not quite being fair to film because visual language can do all sorts of subtle things, but I kept on watching this and thinking about the differences of what a film could do and what a novel can do. What about you, Sky?
Yeah, I was in a similar position. And for me, it was the things that were missing or the choices that were made that left me a little disappointed at the end of the film. I also enjoyed it. Like, it's a very good film. It feels very prestige. It's well shot. Yes, it's almost impossible not to, I think. But for me, I came out feeling a little manipulated because the film jumps between moments of heightened emotion and loss. And there's no way to see that and not be moved, to not be moved to tears. But as I thought about it afterwards, it was missing the connecting tissue, the sense of this world as a family that really lived in the world, that spent time together, that mattered to each other, that I didn't feel like I walked away from the film with. I had a sense of loss because we see the loss of a child, and that's a tragedy that is unthinkable. But I didn't have a sense of the family enough around that loss. And I wanted more of Agnes as well. We get a bit of her, but I feel like it never quite gave me as much as I wanted.
What I did like was the amount of time that this film paused on the hands of these characters, these dirty hands, with then this other connection of the fact that the family that she married into were glove makers. And so there were all these little moments that I actually thought were very well realised. And there's this other one scene that really interested me, Skye, because it was a moment in the book where I thought, how on earth are they going to do this? Because there's a whole chapter in which the origins of the plague as an international, as a transnational moment that shows England as a cosmopolitan place, that it's spelt out in this whole chapter. And I thought, well, they can't possibly do that with a flea flitting around the world. But they do it in the film through a puppet show and also through showing non-white bodies, which, of course, were there in England in this period. And I thought, gee, that's clever. That is one way of shorthanding something very long and complicated in the film. But you might have missed it if you hadn't read the book. But I thought it did show some of the things that film can do.
I think it does. And it is a thoughtful film in its own way as well. It's beautifully shot. It has a very strong visual language, although I don't know that the visual language didn't have necessarily the emotional connection I wanted. But Zhao is a beautiful cinematographer or filmmaker when it comes to nature. She loves nature. It's been a major part of all of her films. And that continues here. The shots of the forest, the shots of the falcon, the sense of the connection Agnes has to nature are really beautifully drawn out through this film.
But as you say, some of that leans into the obvious, where there are gaping holes and dark moments and, you know, birthing moments in the forest, all of which is sort of pointed to very strongly. But there's a nice texture. There's a nice sort of gritty texture to some of the details of everyday life, which I did enjoy.
Yes, likewise. I think this is a strong recommend for the book and definitely check it out for the film from me.
yes, and same from me. But again, watch it and read it all critically.
Yes. Kate, thanks for joining me for the chat.
That is an absolute pleasure, Skye. And of course, we should tell people what we're doing, where else they can find us. So I'm on The Bookshelf every week with Cassie McCullough.
And I'm on Radio National's Arts Hour every Wednesday from 10 to 11.
And this has been a very special Pod Extra. We'll hopefully have more of those for you. So keep listening. Bye for now.